irregularidades en el tratamiento del proyecto. Los jueces dijeron que el legislador no puede pretender que se vuelva a realizar un debate que perdió en el Parlamento. Además, advirtieron que ningún juez o tribunal del país puede suspender una ley en su totalidad, ya que introduciría el caos en la vigencia de las leyes y se lesionaría el principio de la división de poderes. Estamos en contacto con nuestro compañero Néstor Buzo, presidente del Consejo Federal de Comunicación Audiovisual y presidente de Farco.
La coalición por una radiodifusión democrática quiere manifestar la alegría, la complacencia por este fallo de la Corte Suprema de Justicia. Entendemos que es un fallo claro, contundente.
La presidenta Cristina Fernández también celebró este fallo del máximo tribunal del país que pone en vigencia la ley de radio y televisión de la democracia.
Un paso muy importante, como es, bueno, realmente terminar con la barbaridad jurídica y constitucional que significaba que una ley aprobada por mayorías del Congreso como nunca fuera imposible de aplicar por una medida cautelar que además solicitaba a uno de los diputados que había perdido la votación.
Y así llegamos al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a Telesur y a la Radio del Sur de Venezuela, al diario La Jornada de México, al Foro Argentino de Radios Comunitarias y a la Radio de la ONU de Estados Unidos. A nombre de Valery Velázquez y del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. That's your host, Robert Norris, me coming to you for the next 2 hours, special guests, hopefully, Craig Canada, maybe a call-in from Anita Henry, and a scheduled call-in from Roger Mensch, the subject, the marijuana struggle to legalize medical marijuana, the Measure K Commission in Santa Cruz, the tax and regulate initiative statewide, you name it, we're going to cover it. Come on back at 7 and join us.
Dislocated,
one, that was a number by Anita Coates from her CD, The Curse and the Gift, which I think I got on the streets recently. I'm not sure if she's here still in town, but she's one of the folks that shows up perhaps briefly on Pacific Avenue until they move on or they discover that it's too uncomfortable to stay, that either of these things can happen, or they're tough enough to hang in there in spite of being moved here and there and threatened with tickets and even ticketed by the Santa Cruz Police Department. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert, also known as Robert Norse, and I'll be with you for 2 hours on this show, which is called Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. This is a call-in show. You can call me at 427-3772, area code 831, in case you're outside of Santa Cruz area, 831-427-3772. As mentioned before, I'll be having some guests in the studio, one of them anyway, hopefully, and a call-in from Roger Minch, who's the local medical marijuana service provider up in Felton, who has been under repeated attack first from D.A. Bob Lee, then from the Santa Clara County D.A. for providing medical marijuana in ways that apparently the two counties find inappropriate. You can find some of the discussion of Mensch's struggles on indybay.org/Santa Cruz, indybay.org/Santa Cruz. Interestingly enough, on one occasion, he actually got the support from council member and sometime now mayor Mike Rotkin of Santa Cruz, who is quite liberal on matters outside Santa Cruz, outside his purview as mayor, in terms of marijuana issues, in terms of civil liberties issues nationally, for instance. But when it comes to the civil liberties of homeless people locally, it's a different story. He's liberal on UCSC stuff, where he wants to see the preservation of community studies, the program that he is a teacher in or an instructor in, and also I think he's even spoken against the UCSC restricted free speech, free association rules. But down in Santa Cruz, he is pursuing Wes Modes for walking in the DIY parade December 31st of last year. And something that could really put Wes in jail for a number of months, if not longer, because it involves another hoked-up charge having to do with his being involved in the Trash Orchestra, which is a group of percussionists who were in solidarity with the Drum Circle folks when they were trying to defend their right to be at the farmers market location when the police under Sergeant Michael Harms decided that it was time to move in and start citing some folks for some rather trivial offenses, and that provoked a confrontation that resulted in a near riot downtown about a year and a half ago. Sergeant Harms has been quite militant in moving the Drum Circle out of the downtown area, well, almost out of the downtown area. It's now currently at the Soquel Bridge area, at Soquel and South River Street, where it had a nice afternoon yesterday, as far as I could see when I came down. We have a new meeting time for the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom Civil Liberties group that I'm working with, HUF, it's called, and we meet there now every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. You're invited to come on down if you're interested in these issues. Hopefully I'll have a little sign that says HUF so you can see who we are. There's a lot of little groups meeting, some folks playing the drums, some folks drinking coffee, some eating donuts provided by Rene Curry and other locals, Jake of another religious ministry. It's a nice, warm, pleasant, at least yesterday, not too hot place to meet. And the police were generally leaving people alone. My hat's off to the SCPD for showing a little common sense. And I write about it on indybay.org/Santa Cruz if you want to check that out. What else we got here? A couple things are happening. I will not be with you on Sunday for my normal Sunday show, which is 3.5 hours long, starting at 9:30 in the morning, generally. I'm going down to Los Angeles, Pasadena area to witness and be present for a court appearance, an appeal of an ancient arrest that happened here in Santa Cruz that I've talked about many times on the air. For those who are new, it has to do with the Santa Cruz City Council's increasing attempt to cut back on public comment, public discussion, and public dissent, particularly when it comes to council, particularly when it's made in an overt and unmistakable form. Mine was in the form of a don't act like a bunch of fascists sort of mock Nazi salute that I gave then-Mayor Chris Krohn back in March of 2002 when he shut down and threatened with arrest peace activist Susan Zeman. Interestingly enough, I ran into Chris, who I know on a first-name basis, nice enough guy as an individual, in Zachary's the other morning. Sat down next to him. Actually, I was talking with a couple of other people in that group and wondered if wasn't it time that he sort of apologized for what happened, the false arrest. I was arrested for disrupting a meeting for this silent two-second gesture, which you can find online. If you go to, I don't know, Nazi Salute Norse, you should find it. And it's now become a federal case. In fact, an interesting, rare appearance of the 11-member Federal Court of Appeals, en banc panel of the Federal Court of Appeals, is examining the issue to, I hope, rein in city councils that harass, threaten, and arrest people who are dissenting but don't disrupt their council meeting, but essentially they are engaging and intimidating members of the public with the threat of that kind of arrest or exclusion. And that's what happened to me. I was arrested and held, and eventually, of course, the charges came to nothing. And the next 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks following that, a bunch of us were up there essentially giving the don't act like a bunch of fascists salute to the city council to let them know not that we particularly are big fans of the Nazis, but that we favor the right to speak out. And if people in the modern day, 2002 then, now 2010, era are acting like fascists or acting in a manner that's reminiscent of dictatorships in the past, not only do we have the right to say so, but we have the obligation to raise the issue. So we'll see if the Ninth Circuit agrees with me or not on that. That'll be happening on Tuesday. It is being broadcast live, but only if you go to the federal courts in San Francisco, Portland, or Seattle, and only if you happen to get in there and reserve a room or a space in the area to, I guess there's a special on-air viewing room, but it will be available as an audio later for those who want to hear it. Anyway, I won't be around because I'll be down there, and troublesome Thomas Levitt, who does the wake-up call, hopefully will be taking my show during that period. I'm conferring with him after today's show to see if we can cook up a good show. It may just be a repeat of an earlier show, but hopefully I'll have some suggested tapes for him to play, and maybe we can take it from there. Other things that have been happening this week are the Ana Richardson Miguel de Leon permanent injunction hearing, another boondoggle by the city attorney, or the city attorneys, Mr. and Mrs. Barasone, John and Susan. In this case, Susan is covering the case, which involves the attorneys that I talked to for the opposition, estimated $50,000 to $100,000 in expenses. Days and days of trial before a judge, 23 witnesses involving police officers taken away from their duty downtown, Parks and Rec employees, Chief Ranger John Wallace, parking attendant maintenance workers, all with the attempt to deal with two homeless musicians who are downtown, who have already been enjoined for the last year from sleeping downtown after dark. They've been pursued by the police with cooked-up charges trying to claim that they violated that injunction by sleeping during the day downtown with their stuff next to them, which the police falsely claimed and the city attorney falsely charged as being in a violation of the camping ordinance because it was, quote, setting up a campsite with the intent to remain overnight when there was, A, no campsite, and, B, no intent to remain overnight. And even a judge as closely allied with the city bureaucracy as Judge Tim Volkman, and I think all these judges are pretty much, frankly, he couldn't stomach that, and he found them not guilty. But now it's another $50,000 to $100,000. 3 months later, city attorney is back saying, oh, no, you want to extend this injunction and make it a permanent injunction, making any sleeping downtown by these two after 11 o'clock at night and perhaps in an expanded area, and perhaps for additional things, not just an infraction crime where they can take them to court if they want, prosecute them, convict them, and then if they don't attend to the infraction, if they don't respond to the penalties that are done, if three such tickets are ignored, they can try them for a misdemeanor and put them in jail for up to 6 months. No, that's not enough. They want to be able to jail them immediately, wherever they find them, if they dare to fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night in the downtown area. And Susan Barasoni, the city attorney, wants to expand that area and wants to expand the number of so-called crimes that can then be prosecuted even without a trial, a formal beyond a reasonable doubt trial. There's a lesser standard for this whole injunction. Usually you have to find someone guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a pretty high standard. This kind of injunction only requires they be found that by clear and convincing evidence you show that there is harm to the city greater than the harm to the defendants, which is a slimy way of getting around the rights of the defendants in order to prosecute them. You also don't have to give them a lawyer because it's even though it's a jailing offense, which you would if it's a misdemeanor, infractions don't require that you provide a public defender for your victim that you're going after, or your perpetrator, if you want to use police-type language. But this would allow them to short-circuit that situation, and it's a nasty hearing that's going on. It's also being done in a rushed fashion, which does not allow the attorneys for the defense who volunteered their time because they thought this case was complete crap, Mark Briscoe and Jonathan Gettleman, don't allow them the time they need to do their other cases. Gettleman has another trial starting on Monday, so he won't be able to finish the trial. They have to turn it over to someone else. And it's being rushed through, sort of in the fashion that Becky Johnson's trial for Sinister Sidewalk Singing was done back in April, where she needed time to prepare the case, and the attorney on the case, Ed Fry, needed time, and they weren't given it. Anyway, this is an interesting case. It starts again tomorrow at probably around 9 o'clock in Department 4, and I recommend folks wander on down there and check it out. I will not be able to because I'm leaving town for this event next Tuesday down in Los Angeles. I have to travel in this way because I'm going with the attorney who's driving down there, and I've got to hitch a ride with him, so I got to leave early. So check it out. I'm hoping to get some reports, and I do have some tape I'm going to be playing today from that trial, assuming I get to it. And, of course, some of the usual tape I play of street interviews. And, of course, this series of hopeful, disinteresting discussion with Roger Mensch and others at 7 o'clock, which will be coming up in about 45 minutes or less. And, of course, your calls, which are always welcome and really the life of this show. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Oh, hi. Robert, I'm sorry. I dialed the wrong number.
Oh, okay. Well, try again.
All right. Thanks so much.
Okay. Well, even a wrong number can be a moment of hope here. You should also know that Free Radio Santa Cruz is in transmitter trouble. Apparently the FCC has cracked down on our landlord, and she or he is giving us notice we have to move, but we ain't got no place to move to. So if you want to hear this thing on your radio, if you want to hear shows like this, you better look around and try to find someone who's got the ovaries or the balls to allow, essentially, an illegal transmitter on their property. That's something we need. It's illegal, of course, only in the narrow sense of the kinds of laws set up under Clinton and Bush that prohibit and restrict those of us who want to have real community radio from doing so. We aren't hurting anyone. We aren't pushing anyone off the air. We aren't interfering with any airline traffic. We don't cause any problems. In fact, we pass on information, so much so that the Santa Cruz City Council, about whom I rarely have anything good to say, actually passed a aren't they sweet resolution for us on two occasions, once with Mayor Cynthia Matthews dissenting, but even more recently, she approved it. Apparently, she likes our station and supported our station. So good for her for coming around to that position. And good for you if you can help us find some kind of a new place to locate a transmitter. It has to be on relatively high ground. Can't be downtown, but it can be on the east side or the west side. And let us know. Give a call to the free radio voicemail if you have any suggestions. 427-4523, 427-4523. You can also go online to freakradio.org and connect with us there, and we can connect with you. And you can also read the story on Indie Bay, Santa Cruz Independent Media, Santa Cruz Indie Media, which Skidmark Bob, one of our old-time broadcasters, he and I are kind of, and Dennis are probably the three oldest broadcasters around in terms of the number of years we've been doing this on free radio, and get in touch with him, read his story. I also have written about Anna and Miguel De Leon, taking a lot of stuff from Becky Johnson, who carries on an endless battle with the bigots on the Santa Cruz Sentinel Topics, which is the sort of the comment section. It's the end of every Santa Cruz Sentinel story website. I've written a kind of a my own comments. I've added Becky's comments, and I put them up for people to look at on Santa Cruz Indie Media to follow the Anna Richardson Miguel De Leon trial. But again, the station really is on the edge of going off the air. And if you're listening to us on computer, you know, on the internet, you may still continue to find us there. I think we're still probably going to continue there, but we need a transmitter if we're going to be the free radio station that we have traditionally been. So think about that and see if you can help out. You can also join us on air again, 427-3772. That's a possibility. A couple things are happening. There is a Santa Cruz City Council meeting coming up with some crazy shit happening, in a way. There is a new law being proposed by our ever-inventive city attorney, John Barisoni. I suspect it comes from his fertile brain. It is a law to, I'm a little bit unclear as to why it's being done, but I suppose the more I ponder it, the clearer it will be. And if I'm planning to call in to my show on Sunday, although I won't be in the studio, I'm hoping I can persuade Thomas to extend his show a bit and take a call-in or two, maybe one of them from me. I'll be down south, as I mentioned before, and maybe I'll have some new ideas on this. But this is an ordinance that, well, let me give you some background. A year ago, the city passed an ordinance making any three unattended infractions, meaning three tickets you get that you don't pay any attention to and that go off to a failure to pay status, they don't have failure to appear anymore for infractions at the court level, makes that a misdemeanor, which means it's punishable by up to 6 months in jail. You do get a jury trial and a public defender, though, and it also it's a more serious offense. But as I said, you get a jury if you want one, so it may be an option for you to say, look, I had to sleep at night. I had no option, so please don't arrest me. Don't send me to jail for 6 months. That wouldn't be very, oh, maybe you should send me to jail. I could get a place to sleep. I don't know. And the reason I mention that is that the great majority of citations gotten by Anna Richardson and Miguel De Leon prior to their preliminary injunction last year, which they've had all for the last year, were for sleeping downtown. And it wasn't for trespass. It wasn't for any kind of even nuisance crimes. There were very few of those other crimes. There were a few, but overwhelming majority was for sleeping tickets. In the last year, Anna and Miguel have gotten, I think, three citations for that were thrown out by the judge at a hearing 3 months ago, where they tried to claim that those I mentioned before citations were camping citations that violated the injunction. But in fact, they have not been convicted of any citations in the last year. So, nor have they been called to court on them that I'm aware of. Maybe those three were tickets they were given that were possibly, well, as charged, the tickets were thrown out by the judge at the injunction hearing. So presumably, they would also have been thrown out at a standard trial. Because the standard at a trial is even higher than the standard in an injunction hearing, I think. And although sometimes these technicalities get a little complex and they evade even my firm grip on things. But this new ordinance that's being proposed on Tuesday is going to supplant the old ordinance, which says, well, you don't deal with three tickets, we can take your ass to jail and well, we can charge you with a misdemeanor, and then if we convict you on that one, we'll send you to jail. And if you don't appear for that one, that's a failure to appear. You'll be picked up on a warrant and taken to jail, held till trial, and then presumably found guilty and sentenced to jail. This actually has happened to a guy called Melvin Jones, who apparently didn't deal with three tickets. I have not heard a lot more about it, except I saw his case in the paper and I mentioned it. Well, that's not enough for the city attorney. He wants a stronger law, and the stronger law is slightly different than the law passed last year, which really wasn't even necessary, because for every infraction in the Santa Cruz book, except for code book, except for the sleeping ban and the blanket ban, which we were able to explicitly change back in 1999 after a lot of pressure from homeless activists. But except for those two infractions, every infraction, if you do it twice within a 48-hour period, it's a misdemeanor anyway. This, however, means if you don't deal with... So what I'm saying is that already, for the last 20 years or so, or from time immemorial, for all, as far as I know, since Santa Cruz was around, since this code, these codes were passed, you don't need even an unattended infraction law that says three citations and you're out. Because you already have two citations for the same crime, and you got a misdemeanor anyway. But they wanted to say that, well, if you get one ticket for sitting near a statue, another ticket for smoking downtown, a third ticket for sleeping, and you don't deal with those, then we can get you, even though you haven't done two tickets in any one category. That was passed last year. Now they want to change the law to say that, and I'm trying to understand this, if you don't show up for any three infractions within a six-month period, then, here's what it says. On three occasions during any given six-month period, a person fails to appear in connection with a citation issued for a criminal violation of any provision of this code, you know, sitting next to a building, or to post bail in connection with that citation, the city attorney may thereafter, in the exercise of his or her discretion, for a period of 1 year, follow the last failure to appear or post bail, prosecute any subsequent violations of that code by that person as misdemeanors. Huh. Except that's almost already, that's already true, although the time period is less than 6 months. Usually it's the crime has to appear twice within 48 hours for some things, like unreasonably disturbing noise, you know, like singing too loud downtown. That's how Judge Almquist interpreted it, though I don't think that's at all part of the code statute in the case of Becky Johnson recently. But Some panhandling, definitely. If you do it twice within a six-month period, that's a misdemeanor on the second crime. Some are not. This may be an attempt to get around our 1999 sleeping ban provisions, because that said, if you sleep twice, whether it's within 24 hours, 48 hours, or 6 months, it's still just an infraction. And since the overwhelming majority of infraction tickets issued to these two, Miguel de Leon and Anna Richardson, to take an example, were sleeping tickets, it looks like they may be trying to find a way to punish people with jail for sleep. It's not entirely clear to me that's what's done, though, so I'm going to have to look this over more closely. I got a call from the Sentinel reporter who wanted to hear what my great wisdom on this issue was, and I'm going to have to, you know, put on my thinking cap and try to figure it out, and maybe I will. Maybe you already have. This is coming up at the next Tuesday City Council meeting, where there's only one session and it's only in the afternoon. Again, the Rotkin approach, which says workers, don't bother to come. We're going to figure this all out for you with the help of our wise and great city manager, Dick Wilson, soon to be Martine Bernal. Not the best democratic process, not the process I recommend, but the process that Mayor Rotkin, and I presume Mayor Coonerty, when he comes into power in November, will follow as well. Let me see if I have some actual street stuff, though, because all I can talk up a storm, it's often more helpful to have other people do a little talking as well. And I think we may be there. I'm going to go for it and see what we've got here. let's roll into the street interviews, and perhaps we can hear this or that from you at 427-3772. Free Radio Santa Cruz's call-in number. So come on, give me a call if you'd like.
So here we are down on Pacific Avenue. This late night music, actually, it's not that late. It's about 5 after 10 in front of Borders. We got a man doing some strumming. What's your name, strummer?
I'm Kelius.
And how's the strumming tonight? You're of course strumming illegally, seated on a planter and within 10 feet of a building. Aren't you ashamed?
Not really. I'm having fun. Doing the best I can to stay warm and happy.
Hassles with the gendarmerie?
Not as of yet. They keep rolling by about every 5 minutes. But
they're protecting your safety.
So they say.
Well, it looks pretty mellow. You got a group of about 10 people here just sort of hanging out. The occasional shouter and ranter, but
They can get loud, but I'm all family out here. We all love each other.
I see you have a pooch on the avenue. There is a local pooch on the avenue.
Well, fortunately for us, we actually have our service tags. Got them up in San Francisco, so they really can't fuck with us. They can come up and make a courtesy and let us know that they can't be over here, but then we get to tell them to fuck off.
It's a pleasant feeling, I imagine.
Usually it's very empowering.
Well, anything else? Any reports from the street? Any note? Winston hasn't been harassing you lately?
Not as of recently. No complaints.
Have you seen Eva, the woman with no legs, around much?
No, I actually heard she got taken in, on Friday for some reason.
I know she was arrested a week ago, but then she was released. I talked to her at the beginning of the week, but then after that, I haven't seen her. I heard that she didn't show up at the drum circles.
Yeah, I didn't see her at the drum circle on Wednesday, yesterday, so I don't know.
And this is a street interview from Thursday, a week ago. It would have been today is the 17th, so it would have been the 10th, June 10th. And Eva, the rather feisty woman, gets around on a skateboard. She has no legs, was in custody. I saw her in custody about 3 or 4 days ago, but I wasn't sure what she was there for, and we didn't have a chance to talk. I asked her what she was charged with, and I couldn't really hear what her response was. Deputies were not apparently eager to have me talk to her either, and so that was that. And if anybody has any news or information about her, please call in 427-3772. She claims she was raped by the deputies in jail. I have no idea if that's true. She also made some other claims that were significant. She's a pretty outspoken person, and some would classify her as way outspoken. But that's what this station is about. It's about speaking out on issues and speaking out your personal experience. And that is what I try to give people a chance to do.
Expecting any news flashes that come out.
Of course. I'll keep you in the loop.
I hope so. And again, we've been talking with
Kelius.
Thank you, Kelius. We're here in front of Borders talking to some a local ukuleleist.
Not a local, actually. I just came into town, today.
A traveling ukuleleist.
Yes, from Fort Collins, Colorado.
Wow, and are you first-time Santa Cruz visitor?
Yes, actually, I am. I've never been here before.
Is this your entourage that you're traveling with here?
His mother actually brought me into town from Grand Junction, Colorado.
Wow.
All the way.
Some sort of major drug deal?
No major drug dealing, but I live here, and my mother does live in Colorado. Unfortunately, no drugs. I'm sure I could find you some, because this is Santa Cruz. And you might not even have to deal it. You might just get it for free, because you can just tell people you're a reporter. You might just get some for free, you know?
A reporter's prerogative.
Yes, exactly.
So here you are down on the corner, your first night here. You haven't gotten any tickets yet.
No, I haven't, actually. I haven't even been hassled by any cops.
Although you've been getting the routine police surveillance.
Yeah, we actually got talked to earlier because we may or may not have been smoking weed.
Shocking.
But, I mean, we just got told to move, so we moved. But it wasn't anything like Fort Collins where I would have gotten a ticket, which is pretty shitty.
And probably gives you a favorable impression of Santa Cruz.
What's the matter?
Yeah, actually it does. They're a lot more lenient here. The only thing is, like, the dog thing. Like, I wasn't sure if I could have my dog here on Pacific, and that's really weird because in Fort Collins, like, it's a dog town and a bike town. Like, you can bike everywhere, and you can have dogs wherever you want.
Don't be poor, but you can have your dog.
Yeah, pretty much.
And again, we're talking with...
Jojo.
Thank you, Jojo. Anything you want to add?
No, but I do love this town so far. So keep it up, Santa Cruz.
All right. Thank you, Jojo. Now, the man who brought Jojo to town, or is it your mom who brought Jojo?
My mother, actually, technically, as she was driving through back from Colorado.
You're going to strum a little here on the tarmac, so to speak, in front of the closed borders.
We're very anxious to have us smoke the bowl for, you know, a whole 20 minutes, so... Okay.
And your pick comes out of your pocket. You're suiting up with your guitar strap over your... Well, no, you're just going to sit down illegally on a planter box.
I know.
And begin.
Stick out some wicked hair.
And here we go. Any songs about poor people are particularly appreciated?
What? Do I have to stick to the right of way, or can I just jam?
You can do whatever you feel like.
Mind if I just jam to the right of way?
Not at all.
Okay. You mind?
Is the name of this. What kind of a dog is this?
German Shepherd Chow.
This is a large but very hairy dog.
Yes.
And rather chunky as well.
Yeah, of course, I beat him a lot.
He's a nice looking pooch. How old is this dog?
17 months.
And are you yourself recent in town or?
Fairly recent. I've been here for about a month.
What's your impression of Santa Cruz?
Beautiful. The people are all right for the most part, but the cops are kind of dickish.
What experiences have you had, pro or con, with the cops?
We'll say as, well, yesterday I got 4 tickets in one day.
Wow, that's almost a record. Go ahead.
I was sitting on the sidewalk, panhandling, of course, and my dog...
Abusively grabbing at women's skirts, screaming and ranting.
Oh, of course, of course, of course. And my dog happened to be laying in the planter. I didn't have his leash in hand, and he has no tags, but he is a service animal, so he's allowed here on the avenue. So I got a ticket, 3 infractions in one, for no license, no leash, and dog in the planter. And as I was getting this ticket, I was getting written another ticket for throwing a penny in the street.
Well, yeah, that makes no sense. Maybe it does make sense, actually. Who was the officer who was so dutifully was able to rack up city funding from your pocket?
Oh, I didn't really catch his name. I was really too...
Did your citation with you?
No, I ripped it up.
And did you in front of the officer or afterward?
In front of him.
And what did you do with it after? Did you litter again by flinging the tickets to the winds?
No, one occasion I waited until he left, and one occasion I just threw it in the trash.
Do you have a low opinion of tickets in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, you can say that.
Have you seen any other behavior of police on the street that you want to comment on?
Not too much. I mean, they're really racking us for just stupid petty crap. I mean, I got another ticket yesterday for just standing on my skateboard on the sidewalk, just standing on there. You know, technically, I guess that's considered skateboarding downtown. And I got another ticket later that night for sitting over by a bench. I guess I wasn't supposed to be doing that either.
Within 14 feet of a bench is a forbidden zone.
Yeah, I guess so. And then I got another ticket today. For sitting up over at the levee.
And then wind up over here. Sitting at the levee. What
well, my backpack happened to be upon a shrubbery.
Were you crushing a shrubbery?
It seemed to... That was the appearance, yes.
Do you think you damaged the shrubbery?
Not any more than it was damaged already.
Did you apologize to the shrubbery? There you have it. Ungrateful and vicious outsiders attacking our shrubbery. Now, this makes a total of 7 tickets in what, 24 hours? 48 hours? Or
That was roughly about a 24-hour period.
So it wasn't 4 tickets, it was 7 tickets you're actually talking about.
Right, including the one with the 3 on there, yes.
Maybe 6 tickets, I mean, or 6 or 7.
After the 3rd ticket, Officer Winston, I believe his name?
Could be. I've heard his name mentioned in this connection with this kind of stuff.
He has actually given me 2 of those tickets. And then he also said because I had 3 or 4 in that one day that he was going to go issue me a warrant at this time and that it would be out in about 30 days.
Issue you a warrant, it would
for
be out.
For having more than 3 unpaid tickets.
Well, you can't pay the tickets until you're found guilty of the tickets. And you can't be found guilty of the tickets until you get a court date for the tickets. And you won't get a court date for the tickets for at least a month after you receive the tickets. So Officer Winston is, at the very least, jumping the gun.
Of course. Yeah. That's what he does best.
Apparently so. Well, he's got a gun, and he knows how to jump it, I guess.
You know, let me clarify this. You can't, the tickets will not be considered unpaid tickets until a time has elapsed where a person who gets a ticket has either not made a court date or made a court date and missed it or made a court date, been found guilty, and then declined to pay. Those are unattended infractions. For Officer Winston to mistakenly or maliciously or incompetently claim that he can issue a warrant based on a number of tickets that have been issued in a period of 24 hours a month before those tickets will even appear in court is either irresponsible or ignorant or just kind of, I don't know, adolescent. I don't know, adolescent, maybe an attack on adolescence. It's inappropriate. How's that?
Oh, nothing but laughter for that one.
We've been talking with
Michael.
Thank you, Michael. So, Mike, you also, I added after we've had that last conversation that Winston, in giving you, what, the final ticket for panhandling?
Within 14 feet of a bench.
Within 14 feet of a bench. He had previously given you another ticket?
Yes.
And he actually stopped his car in a, what, he either double parked or he parked his car, stopped, got out of the car, wrote your ticket, and then got back in his car?
Yes.
The car was not legally parked, though. It was just parked.
Right.
In the middle of the street or whatever.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, it was an emergency. You were, in fact, showing complete disregard for the authority of our local lawmen.
I guess.
Or perhaps you hadn't even noticed or given a shit about our local... Well, our local ordinances, you see, we have a kind of a religious attitude towards our local ordinances. We believe that they truly represent the soul of Santa Cruz, or perhaps the soul of the police department, or maybe the soul of the downtown association. Anyway, it's somebody's soul, and you are the heel, so put your soul down and get healed. Think about that one for a while, won't you? Well, here's some really loud music downtown about 6:15 on Sunday. I'm standing across Pacific Avenue with an amplified band in front of Rouge. We're talking three guys with guitars and one guy with a saxophone. This is super loud shit. But we'll see if they even have a permit. We'll find out here. Hey, David. have a permit. And off to the side, we have Saxon Peter listening, as well as Curtis Relaford. The guy playing the bench. So what's happening? Any reports in the street?
The latest word on the street is things are getting rowdy out here, and OSOGs out here don't like it.
Any hassles from the police?
Always. I just got out of jail 2 days ago. I got a ticket every day since I've been out. They're harassing the hell out of us.
What kind of tickets have you gotten since you got out?
I was in the alley, and I actually got a ticket for smoking on the boulevard, and I wasn't on the boulevard. And then today, and that was just today, I get a ticket because I was sitting there panhandling, not doing nothing. And downtown host told me I had to leave, so I was getting up to leave, and the cop came over and wrote me a ticket anyway.
You have a copy of that ticket with you?
No, I burned them all.
I see. You're in front of, near Artisans. What's your name?
I'm Brad Kelman. I was on the front page of Sunday paper 3 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. I vaguely remember, Brad. You were the repeat alcoholic or something?
Yes. I'm the most... I'm Otis of Mayberry.
But you don't seem too drunk to me at the moment.
No, I don't get drunk, and I don't panhandle drunk, and I don't aggressively panhandle. I try to compliment people, make them smile, and have a better day. You know, we are the world. We are the children.
So what was the jail thing about? What were you in jail for?
I'm always in jail because I'm constantly harassed.
So what were they charging you with that put you in jail?
For being an asshole.
They charge you with being an asshole?
Yes, I'm just a dipshit.
Well, I don't know about that. So how are people treating you today?
People are pretty nice today. It's a Sunday, you know, but, people will be people. You got good people, you got bad people. All races, all kinds, you know. I just love people.
Actually, one of your sign is upside down.
That's for a reason.
Okay. Well, thank you. And again, we've been talking with...
It's an eye catcher, Brad Kelman, right here on your radio.
Thank you, Brad. So I got another report from Baltimore, who is at liberty after being arrested twice in the last week. Once legitimately, apparently, he said, for being drunk in public. Another time, illegitimately, for sitting on the lip of a flower box. I see Ray here is doing some improvisational drumming with imaginary drumsticks. And I'm going to
fake those guards.
All right. Traversing the mall here. He also reports that a lady in a wheelchair, Connie Brown, an older woman, was arrested on the levee for drunk in public. So, how's it going? Any hassles from police? Any good sales?
Maybe a little bit of money.
Looks nice. Any reports from the street for free radio?
No, I haven't seen anything today.
Thank you. And people, are you going to be here like regular times? People can check out your stuff? Or?
I'll be here on the weekends, mid-afternoon.
And
afternoon.
What's your name?
Hannah.
And we're talking in front of Dale Williams Jewelers. And this is your own jewelry.
Yes, yeah, this is mine and my boyfriend's jewelry.
Hey, who makes most of the jewelry here?
Totally her.
Really? And your name is?
Ross.
You guys are local or from out of town?
I'm local.
And you're?
I'm from out of town, but I live here.
I see. So you're part of it. Is that right? Is this man seduced and tricked you into coming into town?
Apparently.
Indeed. Well, you will keep an eye on the two of you. Thanks. We've been talking with? Oh, thank you. Popcorn?
I don't know.
Could be.
Popcorn?
How embarrassing. In any case, I brushed my face again, and we've been talking with?
Huh?
What's your name again?
I forgot now.
Uh-oh. Well, you know your name.
Hannah.
And?
Ross. Thanks, guys.
And up here on this corner, at about 25 after 6, it's a band strumming away in front of New Leaf. We're talking bass, viol, guitar, banjo, and washboard. Galactic Smuggies. So I'm here with a man who's got a mandolin that's twice as old as he is. What's your name?
Yeah, I found it in the garbage in Los Angeles, broken in half, and it's all fixed now and nailed back in Santa Cruz.
How do you know it's 100 plus years old?
by the serial number and the 05 that's imprinted in the neck. They could barely read them now.
And, of course, we're talking with
Dave and Gail.
You say you took a trip up to Mendocino recently, and what did you find?
It's peaceful, quiet, beautiful place. Gold eagles soaring all over my head while I was playing mandolin. A lot of everybody I talked to was pretty nice. Quiet little town.
You said the Native Americans were friendlier than the colonial Americans, the honky types?
Oh, they wouldn't even talk to me.
Well, you are 53 with a lot of hair on your face.
Yeah, it feels better with it. So.
No, it's sort of
like sandpaper when I shave.
Cool. Well, again, anything you've seen on coming back to Santa Cruz in contrast to Mendocino that you noticed?
The noise. It's a lot noisier here. You could hear me. They said they could hear me from a half block away playing my mandolin up there. It was so quiet.
Well, maybe we'll hear you at some point.
No, I want to go back.
Thanks, Dave.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
In your telephone booth, we have a veteran of the sign. Please help veteran, or at least so says the sign up here by the telephone near Peace of My Heart. But let's listen on the spectacular musical strumming of Meriwether Mike, who's standing illegally on the edge of some kind of planter. Meriwether, again, your criminal behavior precedes you. How's it going?
I'm working this new angle where you break two or more ordinances at once, so they'll not know which one to get you for, and you confuse them and razzle-dazzle them.
Is that working?
I don't know. I'll probably find out, but I'll keep it going.
Well, you're near the one spot. I think there's only about four square area near in front of the Village Yoga where it's actually legal to play because you are 10 feet from the Acapulco railed-in area and 10 feet from the Aqua Blue area.
This is like the DMZs, like between the two combat lines.
The Switzerland of Santa Cruz.
Yeah, we've got a half a dozen spots where it's marginally safe.
And yet you've taken two steps to stand on the berm of a planter around a tree, which puts you in the illegal zone. Now, what's all this about, Meriwether Mike?
Well, I saw you walking this way, so I thought I'd just check, see if you were paying attention.
I don't think that was it, but maybe so. You're a clever one. I see you have your flag, feather, instrument-laden bike with you. Any reports from the downtown we should know about anything happening here that people need to hear the truth about that they may not understand or have yet come to a conclusion on?
I don't have any current good news, bad news. It's pretty much same old snooze in the cruise.
Or no snooze in the cruise after 11, if you don't mind.
Right.
All right, well, thank you, Mike. And
you gotta hide your snooze away.
Hey. You've got to hide you.
Where's Valerie Christie? There's a song in there. How you doing, brother?
I know you've been singing downtown occasionally. Are you keeping up your downtown singing? The song downtown for which some are being prosecuted in courts?
Right. You got to stay sharp on that one.
I expect to hear you the third, fourth, and fifth verses next time I see you, Mike.
Exactly.
Thank you, Mike. So I'm here with Crystal, who I ran into at the Sub Rosa. It's about 15 to 7 here. And I'm. You reminded me, Crystal, that you are. I formerly knew you when you were part of the hospitality squad, or the hosts, as they call themselves. These are. I guess they're now dressed like yellow jackets, but they used to be dressed in purple or in orange, or I don't know. What color was your?
They were maroon.
And you were doing that for 3 years.
Yes, I did.
Between 2002 and
2005.
And how? What was a typical day of a host like?
A typical day basically was arrive to work, take a walk, write down anything we might see, write in the log if you know. Basically, the contacts that we made. Excuse me. Write down the contacts that we made, and then leave the office open for a little while people came in and asked questions.
There used to be an office right next to the Del Mar Theater.
Yes. Yes, it was right next to the Delmar Theater.
Now a cafe, but it was an office.
And that's basically how we go. We would make so many contacts. We basically, when we try to remember how many contacts we'd make with people, and then we'd write them down when we came back in. We'd keep a daily sheet of basically what it was we were doing. So, you know, tourist contacts or Municode contacts. We were, our job was to inform people of downtown violations when they were in violation of them, so that we were the warning before the police department, basically.
Did you do a lot of calling the police?
I personally did not, myself. I did a lot of what I consider to be fair judgment. If somebody got in my face or became aggressive with me, that was usually the only time I would call the cops. I was not.
How many people worked with you?
I think we had 5 people total.
And was that generally the policy? Were you, some have called the hosts the eyes and ears of the police, sort of official paid snitches. What's your sense about that? Is that a fair or an unfair designation?
I don't think that they're necessarily snitches. I think that they do work closely with the police department, so I both, you know, there is a certain amount of a connection there with them. But as far as snitches go, I mean, it wasn't really, I mean, if they saw somebody, you know, booting black tar heroin on the street, yeah, they were going to call the cops, just like I think any other normal person would do. But,
about smoking a joint?
Me personally, I never called.
Other hosts?
Possible. I believe so.
How about sitting within 10 feet or 14 feet of a building?
If they were repeatedly told not to, yes, it would happen.
You better not sit within 14 feet of a building, and then they still did. Then they called. Then the police were called.
Yeah. And then the police were called.
Because of the serious nature of that kind of behavior.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
How did the job pay? How did that do for you?
I made $10 an hour, and at the time I was, when I first got the job, I became pregnant probably 6 months later, and I actually had 2 children with them. So I made a decent enough wage to take care of myself and my daughter with the combined efforts of my significant other.
So you, both you and your other, were working and holding down jobs and also living in Santa Cruz?
Yes. Well, I actually lived, I love Pizza My Heart for a while. I lived in the Guardia Apartments for a while, lived on 14th Avenue for pretty much the duration of after I moved out of the Gallardi Apartments.
And right now you're on the street?
Yes, I am.
And how does that feel? Do you feel like your host experience has made you more trained you to be able to do this better, or does it make you feel worse? How does it make you feel?
When I was doing the job, I met a lot of street kids, basically, and when I became homeless, a lot of those street kids embraced me and basically were like, aha, you're one of us now, you know.
And how did that feel, good or bad?
It was humbling. It was a very humbling experience. I mean, I was always very kind. I never considered myself a snitch. I never would get to the point where people would get that way with me because of the demeanor I used while I was working. I was kind. I never came across as being authoritative. I showed up. I did what was told of me, what was expected of me, and didn't go any further than that.
How long have you been on the streets now?
Two and a half months.
And how has that been? Is that, when we spoke earlier, you indicated you were hoping you'll find a place tonight, and it sounds like it's sometime thing, you're on the street, sometime not. How is that? I mean, you're an attractive younger woman. Are you finding it particularly, is your gender working against you? Is it working for you?
I'm scared, actually, to be wholeheartedly honest with you. It is really terrifying experience for me to be alone and be on the streets by myself. I mean, it's something that, you know, it's...
You don't know why people are befriending you, if they are, whether they have sexual or power motives.
Yeah, basically not knowing who to trust, and, you know, I take medication at night that makes me sleep, and they take it for
psychiatric.
Yeah, basically, it takes psych pills, and they make me fall asleep so hard that if something, if someone were to do something to me,
come up and assault you or something,
I wouldn't wake up. So basically,
but that hasn't happened.
No, it has not happened.
And you sleep pretty much alone?
Yeah. I always,
by preference or because you simply haven't found someone you're comfortable in being in a group with?
Both. The people that I've met, I am comfortable with to an extent, but there's always that fear of I really don't know them that well, and I just met them, and, you know, that it's just, like you said, I'm an attractive woman, and I'm afraid that, yeah, so that something might actually happen. So,
one meal later, we're talking with...
But we're going to wait on that next interview because it's time for our famous musical break, actually our rather humdrum musical break. You can call in if you have any thoughts, experiences, reactions, news, flashes, you name it, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. This is 101.1 FM in Santa Cruz that you're listening to, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris. The name of this show is Bathrop's Piers Broadside, so stay tuned. Don't go away, and come back if you'd like. You can go away if you want, but come back if you feel like it.
Fascinating thing about you. You are always in my dreams. We have kissed many times by now. But only while I'm fast asleep. What are the chances the stars might align? And all of astrology would throw us aside. Thank you.
And that was another one by Anita Coates. That one was called Constellation. However, we do have a caller, and I believe we have a guest on the line. Hey there, guest. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Robert.
And yep. You are, in fact, the infamous Roger Minch.
I am.
And you are a man who's run the Hemporium for, what, 6 or 7 years now?
Yeah, but it's closed.
It's closed? Oh, wait a minute. Weren't you providing medical marijuana to deserving or at least ill people?
The business hasn't been in operation ever since I was arrested in 2009.
So you actually you were arrested before that, and you fought struggles with District Attorney Bob Lee's prosecutions for, what, a couple years, right?
Well, that went on for 6 years.
So in liberal Santa Cruz, you were nonetheless pursued by D.A. Bob Lee. Why did he go after you? What was his concern?
I don't know if it was Bob Lee, per se, but, you know, they have a DEA grant that they get, the sheriff, Santa Cruz sheriffs. The supervisor okayed $275,000. And what that grant does is it pays for a prosecutor and two of the agents. And that's kind of how the federal agenda, that's how they push the federal agenda here. And I'm sure that there's a lot more medical marijuana patients that are prosecuted than anybody else that they ever arrest.
And why are you sure of that? What, have you ever done any Public Records Act requests, or have you had personal discussions with those patients? What leads you to that conclusion, Roger?
Well, for one, they never arrest anybody that they get back in the forest. They hardly ever arrest anybody that has a huge grow back in the forest, which they claim to be Mexican cartel. Why they don't get arrested, I don't know. They have the surveillance equipment to be able to do that. But this is a war on people. This isn't a war on drugs. It's a war on people. And it's criminal what those guys have been doing, and they continue to do.
So how much time have you served in jail for running the Hemporium when you were before you closed it in 2009?
Well, I spent over 6 months altogether.
And that was in the Santa Cruz County Jail?
I spent 5 days in my first case. The second case, I spent 7 days in the jail. That's the one they gave me my medical marijuana back, but I've never been compensated for it. And this last time, they actually drug me over to Santa Clara County and are prosecuting me there because they're hoping that they'll, well, look at the time I've already done. And I know you know a lot about the case or some about it. And for them to go out and get a doctor's recommendation under false credentials, and I verify it, and the doctor says that, yeah, they're a valid medical marijuana patient, and they're not, and then they arrest me.
And this was the most recent case where you served the most time in jail?
That's right.
And the time in jail, was that served, that was pending trial? Or that was after conviction?
Well, my first case was in limbo until, you know, it was off and on limbo. I had won. It was good for a couple of years when the appellate court ruled in my favor. Then it was illegal, and then it got thrown back in the appellate court while I was incarcerated this last time. So it didn't finish up until about June of 2009 on the other seven issues that were remaining in my appeal.
What were you convicted of, Roger? What was your crime?
Sales of marijuana.
And go ahead.
Cultivation.
Sales and cultivation. And what quantities were involved?
Quantities, you know, wasn't a huge issue, but, you know, we were talking 100 plants in my first case and about the same in my second case and a little bit more in my third case. But quantities, you know, what they told me when they arrested me was I should only deal with people that are like 40 years old or older, and that I should just stay over the side of the hill. And
who told you this?
This is a San Jose officer in charge that, you know, they use the Santa Cruz Special Enforcement Team, which is compiled of Highway Patrol, the San Jose Police, and the Sheriff's, and maybe some other agencies. And between that agency and the Santa Cruz Sheriff's, you know, see, they didn't want to give that information up on the stand that the Santa Cruz Sheriff's Marijuana Enforcement Team was involved in the raid here as well. Mm. You know, they didn't have a search warrant for the second house. There was somebody living there. And there's another search and seizure issue that will be addressed sometime here in the future.
So have you been convicted in this third round, or are you still fighting the case in court?
Yeah, we're fighting the case in court. I was just recently assigned a new attorney the last time I was in court. And, you know, they're trying to give me 3 years in prison.
Yeah, for selling, 100 to 200 plants to someone that they set up as a medical marijuana patient through a false doctor?
Yeah, I sold them an ounce each time. You know, they actually called me to try to... set up a buy from me, and I told them that they had to have their paperwork in order. So they went out to a doctor, and they used false credentials. They got a 3 month. This agent got a highway patrol that went undercover and got a doctor's recommendation for 3 months. I called it and verified it. And
who was the doctor?
I'd have to look it up. Takur or something like that.
Did the was the doctor herself or himself fooled, or was she or he part of the scheme?
Oh no, they were fooled. They were definitely fooled. They actually sent that officer to another doctor down the street, because she said he had anxiety and some other issue. And that doctor down the street prescribed him two medications, and he came back to the doctor for getting a medical recommendation. And they had asked him, are you not going to take this medication? He said he was. And he said he needed something for sleeping as well, so they went and wrote him a 3 month recommendation for that.
But if that recommendation was written, isn't that a positive defense for you providing the marijuana to him? Even if he fooled the doctor, if the doctor was fooled, that's the doctor's problem. I mean, they're making it your problem. It's kind of strange.
Oh, exactly. I mean, it's entrapment by estoppel. You know, they've been trying to, they haven't been happy with the judge's decision in my first case, where he stated I could continue operation and not be in violation of probation.
That was Judge Stevens said that here in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, it was Judge Stevens.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the second case, I was going to trial, and I won in the appellate court. And they dismissed my charges and the marijuana charges, but they held this ammo charge over my head. This ammo charge is stemming from my first case. It's the ammo that they left here.
Now, you had a weapon to defend yourself, or you're a regular shooter, or what's the deal with that?
Well, for one, I was born and raised in Pennsylvania. You know, back there, you're pretty much born with a gun.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a veteran as well, and the guns were legal. The one in my safe, I wasn't charged with. The two .22 rifles that I was charged with, one was inoperable, and they had no ammo for either gun.
So, Where are you now in this case? Is there another hearing, or is the trial coming up, or is it on appeal? What's happening?
Well, yeah, my trial keeps getting pushed off. Right now it's scheduled for June 28th. I'm pretty sure it'll be pushed off again. There's a lot of things that haven't been done yet.
At your request or at the district attorney's request?
Well, there's surveillance information that hasn't been gone over. This new attorney has just taken over.
Uh-huh.
Right? This time they arrested my disabled girlfriend as well, you know, Lori Eldridge.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she's got two charges. You know, it's a crime that these people get away with destroying people's lives, let alone disabled people's lives.
Well, I know that your response to all this as well, I first met you back in, I don't know, 2004, 2005, when you were, you know, trying to rally support, and your supporters trying to rally support for you at the courthouse in Santa Cruz. And we wrote some stories up about it on Indie Bay. If you look, by the way, listeners, on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz under the words, Google for Mensch. That's the name of the man I'm talking to on the Roger Mensch, M-E-N-T-C-H, Mensch. You can read some of the background, at least as some of us see it. But your response more recently has been to work to put together a chapter of ASA, Americans for Safe Access. That's just medical marijuana, or that's all marijuana?
No, that's to medical marijuana.
And I've been reading Craig Canada's account of your first few meetings. He writes a story that you may have read called Prospects Good for Santa Cruz Chapter of Americans for Safe Access. You know Craig, right?
I do.
Yeah, I'd hope he'd be in the studio, but he's probably toking off somewhere and slumbering away or whatever. Or maybe who knows what he's doing, but hopefully he'll come in at some point. And Anita Henry, who's also on the Measure K Commission in Santa Cruz, which is supposed to keep an eye on the police so that they don't bust people using marijuana in private over 21, even if it's not for medical purposes, but for recreational purposes or religious purposes or whatever. They had to cancel the meeting of the Measure K Commission because they couldn't get a quorum on Monday. And I guess the next meeting is scheduled, I don't know when it's scheduled for. I'm assuming they meet every 6 months in this farcical kind of cavalcade of non-meetings that they have in a stacked commission that doesn't really look over police records at all in Santa Cruz. But you helped to form, or you're trying to form, a chapter of Americans for Safe Access. And I think you need 10 dues-paying members or something in order to get the thing to run?
To be a sanctioned chapter.
And I mean, when is your next meeting?
It's going to be June 24th. It's at 7 to 9 o'clock p.m.
And where will that be?
That's going to be at 10 or 140 Dubois Street, Suite A. Next to Greenway.
And Greenway, of course, is the first medical marijuana dispensary to open in Santa Cruz back in 2005, which I was pushing for eagerly. Because for 5 years they didn't allow any marijuana sales in the city of Santa Cruz in terms of dispensaries. And finally Lisa Molino got that open. She promptly stopped returning all calls, wouldn't discuss any issues, and I guess she ran for city council in 2008, or claimed she was running, but then didn't show up for any of the city council meeting candidate forums. And then she did show up for this attempt to ban new medical marijuana dispensaries, said not a word opposing that. So that allowed essentially the city council, well, they would have done it anyway probably, but it made the city council, as a majority, well, unanimously passed a ban on all new medical marijuana dispensaries, which puts her and Ken Sampson's club in monopoly positions in Santa Cruz, which perhaps you can hear it in my voice, I am none too pleased with. I don't think it's appropriate or right. I think it's an unprincipled, it sounds like a profiteering choice. Maybe it's just a gutless choice based upon her own, fear of being criticized or restricted by the city.
But I'm not here to talk about
No, I know. I mentioned that because I want to say that's the negative. The positive is I understand Lisa and some of her workers are trying to help with this new ASA chapter, right?
They are, yes.
And so how is that going?
Well, this is our third meeting coming up, so, you know, it takes a little time to get things established, but we're moving forward on it, and there's more people showing up to the meeting, so this meeting, Ben Wright should be there to speak a little bit, so if anybody has some questions, they can come out and ask.
It sounds, yeah, I mean, I'm always pleased to see people organizing around these issues, well, generally. What will this chapter, what does Americans for Safe Access actually do in other cities, and what do you expect to do here in Santa Cruz?
Well, hopefully we'll get the marijuana enforcement team to curtail their behaviors. You know, now I understand what they do is they go out there and throw down a search warrant and they cut all your medicine down, take your money, and if you want to fight about it, then you're prosecuted. That's more like a Gestapo tactics. Then it sounds like what should be done here in America.
Now, is this happening statewide or particularly in places like Santa Cruz or less so in places like Santa Cruz? What's the story?
Well, I don't know about other areas. You know, each county is different. And, you know, when you got DEA grant money coming in, you know, you can expect to have, you know, I'm sure they expect to have things done a certain way to their expectations. You know, ASA is here to write POWs that are incarcerated, right, to build community support for people that go to court cases to appear. And on the, you know, the larger scale of the national is they're going after, they're going to be working with HUD and the VA to stop some of their practices. Hopefully, where, you know, if you're in a HUD situation and you're smoking, you can get kicked out and disqualified.
Yeah, that's what Craig Canada has talked about, being denied not only, you know, HUD stuff, but also he can't even get into, couldn't get into an emergency homeless shelter in Santa Cruz because he was a medical marijuana patient and a regular activist around that issue, mainly, I guess, because he was a patient and he wanted to be able to take his medications. So he writes that, you know, the chapter seems to be growing. And I know that your case eventually resulted in a bad court decision at the either Supreme Court level, I think it was, California Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Where, they had some crazy ruling about how dispensaries are not collectives, or generally speaking, that it's open season on dispensaries in spite of Proposition 215 for medical marijuana. Give me your take on that.
Well, I don't know about that part of it, right? But I know that, you know, they define the caregiver defense in my case to where you just can't go out and be a caregiver to just anybody that has a recommendation. You have to have other consistent behavior, like providing health, safety, or housing to the end. That's how they ruled. I mean, I believe they were completely off base, right? A lot of those people need to retire and move on because the appellate court, all three judges in the appellate court agreed with me.
Mm-hmm.
And they certified it for publication for other cases to be able to use it in court cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then to have all the Supreme Court, all seven justices, reverse that. You know, it's this whole marijuana issue has been tarnished from day one, right?
For sure, sure. It's a major racket. It looks like to me. funding, you know, indirectly funding pharmaceutical companies, but also funding police departments and, you know, all the drug war apparatus and the drug testing business and all that stuff. Sounds like we got a caller who may have a question for you. Can you hang for a minute, Roger?
Yeah, sure.
You're on Free Radio with Roger and Robert.
Oh, actually...
Hello? sounds like some kind of a defect in the phone system or possibly a loud eruption of some kind. I don't know what that was.
Yeah.
We're on the phone. Go ahead. We're on the phone talking. We're talking with Roger. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, it sounded like Craig, but go ahead.
Oh, it did.
Yeah.
Maybe we can catch him again because he didn't stay on the line, or the line wasn't there for him. We're talking with Roger Mensch, who is an activist who's starting an Americans for Safe Action Access chapter. Again, the next meeting of this ASA chapter is going to be on June 24th. That's a week from tonight, 7 to 9 at 140 Du Bois Street, Suite A, next to Lisa Molyneux's Greenway. In spite of all my dissing, and I'll continue to be critical, Roger, I feel that's appropriate from my perspective, but I certainly hope that people do get together to fight this drug war one way or another. I mean, I'm critical of Ben Rice. He helped to help defang Measure K a year and a half ago in the Santa Cruz with a deal that sold out Measure K, as far as I can see. But nonetheless, I understand, you know, people have, well, I don't know what I understand about it, but I'm hoping that people can come together anyway.
Yeah, we have other operators of collectives showing up.
Oh, really? I've heard there are 11 different marijuana providers in the Santa Cruz County area. Is that sounded? I'd heard of Anita's MedX and Lisa's Greenway and Ken Sampson's Lime Kiln and maybe when it was operating the Hemporium and maybe MedCan or something, but I hadn't heard of the other seven. Five or six or seven folks. Have you heard of any of those other people? Or?
I have. I've heard a couple of them anyway.
And they're coming. Are folks are tending to come together to be supportive of this new chapter, or are they interested?
Yeah, they are. Not. I can't say all of them, but we have different people showing up, and it's great to see the support.
So, and you, of course, are doing this even on the edge of jail, fighting for essentially your liberty, and your partner's also fighting for that kind of, engage in that kind of struggle too, right?
Well, I've been in this battle since 2003 here, and I know how lonely it is to go to court without any support. And one thing that Santa Cruz lacks is a supportive group. To stand up. A lot of people don't, you know, they don't want to be seen because of the ongoing harassment by the cops.
That's true enough, I think, in a number of areas. Are there any other drug war prisoners that you're aware of in the Santa Cruz County Jail that you want to do a shout-out to?
I don't. And if anybody could give me information on how I could get to finding out actually how many people in Santa Cruz have had a search warrant done on their house for marijuana. And then try to decide, find out how many were for medical marijuana, right? But trying to get this information, I don't know how to do.
You make a Public Records Act request to Bob Lee. You send him an email that requests that specific information. And if he denies it, then you take a second step. And if you got Ben Rice coming to your meeting, he's an attorney who may or may not have expertise in public records, but that's the place to start. Make a request. I've requested of Bob Lee the number of marijuana convictions. I know that Anita Henry and the Measure K Commission showed by the police department's own statistics in the city of Santa Cruz alone, marijuana busts were up by 50% between the time of 2009 and the time of 2008 and the first 9 months of 2009, which it goes along with the national figures of rising harassment and of marijuana users.
And that doesn't cover the people that don't come forward.
Right.
There's a lot of people that don't come forward because they don't want to be put in jail, right?
Well, I mean,
they don't want to go through this stress and this.
Yeah, well, these figures cover the police records of how many people in Santa Cruz were busted for marijuana.
Okay, but that's busted.
Right.
There's a lot of times where they just come in with a search warrant and they throw it down, they cut all your shit down, and they take all your money. Right, this is what's happening now. So
right.
that figure don't even show up, I bet.
Well, I think if the search warrants were issued, those are also public record.
Well, that's what I'd like to get a hold of.
What you should do is put in a request to the district attorney's office for that information insofar as the DA's office was involved. Maybe you need to do it to the sheriff's department if they were involved. And I'd like to hear what the results of that is. And you might also bring it up at this upcoming meeting, which, again, this is an Americans for Safe Access meeting. We're talking with Roger Minch, who's forming a chapter along with other activists in Santa Cruz, and the next meeting is 7 to 9 on June 24th, a week from today. Is it a week from today? Yeah, it is a week from today, on 140 Du Bois Street, Suite A. So folks are invited to come to that.
We'll have refreshments.
All right.
Yeah.
Smokables for those who have
No, I don't think so.
Indeed. Well,
you know,
can't have it all, I guess. Well, let me turn to the other subject, which we probably aren't going to have a lot of time to cover. And since we don't have Craig in the studio, I don't have my resident expert, or at least a man who's been doing a lot of writing on the issue, seems to know a lot about it. The measure that's on the ballot, Richard Lee's tax and regulate initiative out of Oaksterdam, which Dennis Perrone has denounced and was denounced by Jack Harar before he died, but is also being supported by some as a good first step. Do you have any thoughts on that particular tax and regulate measure that will be on the November ballot?
I really don't want to comment on that because I'm not supposed to take a position on it, as they say.
Yeah, I know that I talked about it with some Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom members yesterday. We haven't been able, you know, we're still debating it. I've read some accounts critical, some accounts favorable. I'm still trying to weigh, will it restrict and essentially gut 215?
My thought on that is it's not, right? It's not going to change the medical marijuana laws that are currently on the books.
Well, that's the question, yeah. One of the questions.
Yeah. And they're talking, the part I don't like is, they have a stipulation in there somewhere that if you deal with anybody younger than 21, well, not in my case because I'm not worried about that, but for other people, the sentence is like four or six years or something.
It's a felony. It turns what has been a misdemeanor, a low-grade misdemeanor, into a felony if you share or pass on or whatever.
Something I think is wrong with that because most of the young people that are going to college and stuff do smoke. And so, it's just another area for them to go and arrest people, right? I'll get out of that area. But...
I think that's an important issue. I mean, you're facing a lot of that problem yourself, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, and there are a lot of areas I want to talk about, but before I do, again, and I've mentioned it on the show, it does impact medical marijuana. Some parts of medical marijuana are respected, others are not, and there is a key provision which allows the legislature to amend this initiative. So that means they could amend away 215 because this initiative is more recent than 215, mentions and in a way subsumes 215.
I don't think they can amend away 215. The voters voted it in.
Well, they can't amend it away now, but if they pass this initiative, which allows for it to be amended, they could add amendments to this initiative which nullify or modify parts of 215. That's one of the concerns I have. And I'm not entirely sure if I'm accurate on that, so I want to find out more. You know, I'm also concerned about a number of other things in it. But as you say, that may be a decision for another evening. A discussion for another evening because, you know, you and I don't have a lot of expertise with the exact wording of this particular initiative.
Even though I read it, I don't.
We got to read it again. You got to think about it.
Yeah,
you know, go over with a fine tooth comb. And there's time to do that because it won't be coming up until November, you know, so we have time to discuss it. We're talking with Roger Mensch. Roger, how can people be supportive of this ASA chapter if they can't make it? How can they be supportive of you at your changing court hearings? Because it sounds like this June 28th hearing may not happen, right?
Well, the hearing will happen.
But the trial might not go.
The trial will be put off again.
Is there a website you have, a place where people can go for more info? Is there a number people should call or an email address?
Well, you can go to the Facebook and, boy, let me go see what the address is.
Perhaps if they go to Facebook and just write in your name, Roger Mensch.
Yeah.
That's M-E-N-T-C-H, yeah.
It'll come up.
All right. Well, that sounds good. If there's areas that we haven't covered that you'd like to talk about, feel free to do so now. The people that I'd hope would call in or come in haven't done that, so it's just you and me and the great silent public at the moment.
Uh-huh. Well, people could send donations in. They could become members of ASA. You can do that on the Internet. Go on to AmericansForSafeAccess.org. And if, you know, if they don't come to meetings, they can definitely call when the time comes. They can call their legislatures. You know, I belong to a lot of organizations before, but financially, I couldn't even join ASA, and a friend signed me up with membership fee.
Huh.
But in there, they send you a newsletter monthly, and then they have different agendas, and they have bills that you can just sign your name to that's already written, and send them to your congressman or your assemblyman or senator.
That's another argument against this initiative, is that there's a move to move marijuana off Schedule 1 that'll have much more impact. And locally, there's also this statewide initiative by Ammiano, the local state legislator, not here but up in San Francisco, whose law would be much better than the initiative. And the initiative would, of course, be set in concrete. Actually, it wouldn't be set in concrete if it's amendable by the legislature. But anyway, that's more issues coming up. So people can go ahead.
There's three different initiatives, but I guess the one only got on the ballot.
Only the one from Richard Lee of Oaksterdam, who was denounced by, you know, Perrone as a kind of a multimillionaire entrepreneur character. But go ahead.
I believe that, you know, I know Omar Figueroa, and I think the Drug Policy Alliance did an initiative. And I think it's better for the people versus the one that's been brought forward right now.
But, of course, that's not the one on the ballot, and that's something we'll be making a choice on. But, yeah, I guess we can talk about that more. And, Roger, maybe you can give us a report if you're up for it after this meeting. I'll be doing my show. I may look in on the meeting later once I get off the show. My showtime ends at 8 o'clock on Thursday. And if I don't, though, and you feel, I encourage you to call back and let us know what's happening and, you know, keep fighting, you know, to end this absurd waste of and loss of time and money and personal liberty and personal dignity.
You know, ASA is there to educate the community as well.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of people I talk to think, oh, isn't it legal already?
Right.
And
Little
do they know.
Yeah.
The consequences that many of us have to face.
So that's
for doing nothing wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
Other than providing medicine, they're the ones that created this crime or so-called crime that really angers me.
www.AmericansForSafeAccess.org. Talking with Roger Mensch again next week. There'll be a meeting. I encourage you to post it online on Indie Bay, Roger, so some more folks can be aware of it.
Okay.
And
go ahead. I was just going to say we are in need of a webmaster to set up a...
Looking for a webmaster, okay.
Sure, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Right. And any volunteer that wants to come support the cause and be part of a bigger part.
Got an email address for people, or do you want them to just look you up on Facebook?
Yeah, I think just look me up on Facebook. Now, my email is zarmensch@fbcglobal.net.
Sounds good.
All right, Robert?
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to be a part of the show.
Hey, thank you.
All right.
All right.
Bye-bye. And my apologies to anybody who tried to call in. It looks like the call-in line got put onto a busy hole, but it's off busy now, even though we've lost Roger. You may have some comments or thoughts. Feel free to call in, 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, and also www.freakradio.org here in Santa Cruz. We are in need of a transmitter site. If you want to keep hearing this show, start looking around, asking your friends, seeing where such a thing might happen, because if it doesn't happen soon, we're going off the air. And that's not going to be a good thing, because I like being on the air. Let's hear some more street interviews. I've got another 20 minutes about before Uncle Dennis comes waltzing into the studio. He's feeling better, and he's got his usual From the Cream to the Dregs coming up from 8 to 11.
Crystal.
And Crystal, you've been around, I guess you've been in Santa Cruz, even after you left the host in 2005, you're pretty much around town?
Or? I was born and raised here.
And you stayed during between 2005 and 2010?
Yes.
And what do you notice about the new host? Any different than the old host? Pretty much the same? What's the story?
The only thing that I've really noticed is that they seem a lot more lenient now. Like, I've seen there's dogs walking around on, you know, the streets, and it seems like they're a lot more lax than they used to be.
The hosts.
Yeah, the hosts are. And I don't know if that's because, I don't know if the station, I don't know if that stayed with them or if they got rid of that.
What stayed with them?
The station, the police station, the substation that used
to be. The actual host headquarters is, I think, it's on the second floor of some building around here now. And the police substation, I don't think there is a police substation in that town. I don't know where it is. The dog situation, there was movement to legalize dogs on Pacific Avenue. And though it hasn't quite made it through city council, I think the police are acting as though it has.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any encounters with the host? They've told you to move along?
No, actually, I haven't. They have all been really respectful of me. When I was let go, I think that they didn't want to let me go. It was like a conflict of interest, basically, that I had gotten a DUI with the same officers that I was going to be working with.
You weren't partying with these officers?
No, I was not.
Oh, he's trying to get the dirt on you.
They're partying with the officers.
Yeah. So you're outside. What's the situation for you outside? Do you have a situation where do you plan pretty much from hour to hour, day to day, or do you are you looking, you know, you have a longer term perspective? Don't usually ask these kind of questions, but for some reason it just came up.
Right now I'm kind of doing the hour, day by day thing. I have longer term goals. You know, I'm definitely actively.
What do you want to be eventually?
And we're going to have to hear more of that next week when I come back on Thursday, because on the line with me is activist and writer and local medical marijuana advocate, Craig Canada. Hi, Craig.
Hi there, Robert. Before I get on to regulate, control, and cannabis, can you tell me the name of the woman who is the proponent of Measure K? You told me once, and I wrote it down, and I can't find it.
The proponent of
Measure K.
Well, let's see. The Measure K woman was Theodora Carey, who actually, with Ben Rice, helped put the measure on the ballot, and it got passed, as you know, by 64% of the voters, and then gutted, unfortunately, with her and Rice's agreement in May of 2009, I think it was. Or actually, no, 2007. It was a while ago it was gutted. It was passed in 2006.
Okay, I'm going to make a note of that, and I won't lose it this time. Now then, if you would bear with me, I want to read you some sections from this initiative on the ballot, okay?
This is the tax and regulate initiative coming up.
Right, Regulate, Control, and Tax Cannabis Act of 2010. You know, there's nothing about legalizing in the title. If you look under purposes, number six says provide easier, safer access for patients who need cannabis for medical purposes. Now, the courts are going to, somebody's going to argue, probably somebody like Steve Cooley or Carmen Kucinich or Bonnie DeMatteis in Southern California is going to argue that that means that this is intended to supersede the Compassionate Use Act of 1996.
Pressure, okay. Measure 215, right?
Right. Now then, if you also go down to, let's see where this is here, Section C, Intent, number two. This act is not intended to affect the application or enforcement of the following state laws. And Health and Safety Code 11362.5 is not found in the codes that are listed there. Neither is Health and Safety Codes 11362.7 through 11362.9, which is SB 420. So those acts are not listed, those codes are not listed under the ones this act is not intended to affect the application or enforcement of.
And what's the significance of that, Craig?
Well, that means that the converse of that statement is that, that this act is intended to affect the application or enforcement of 11362.5. And 11362.7 through 8.3. Now, if you look at item 1 of this intent, it says this act is intended to limit the application and enforcement of state and local laws related to possession. And it lists a bunch of them. Now, so in number 1, this act is intended, after it lists all these, it also says, including but not limited to the following, and list a bunch of codes. And again,
let me interrupt you, Craig. I'm sorry. The problem I'm having is, of course, most folks don't have the act before them. Can you, and I know it's hard to do, can you turn this into layman's terms, as you have done in your own writing at examiner.com, for those who want to look at it? What in fact, is the consequence of these exclusions and inclusions of the different health and safety codes that you're mentioning?
Well, the safety codes I'm mentioning are the California medical marijuana laws. Now, you have them not listed among those codes the act is not intended to affect the application or enforcement of. Now, if I can just go on. So, nowhere in this act does it say that Proposition 215 is protected. Now, if you also go down to items 8, 7, and 8 under purposes, it says, ensure that if a city decides not to tax and regulate the sale of cannabis that by and selling cannabis within that city's limits remain illegal, but that the city's citizens still have the right to possess and consume small amounts, except as permitted under health and safety sections 11362.5 and 11362.7 through 11362.9, which are the California's medical marijuana law. Now, in that sentence, it says three times, it specifies explicitly city. Ensure that if a city decides not to tax, that buying and selling cannabis within that city's limits remain illegal, but that the city's citizens shall have the right to possess and consume small amounts. The first thing is that nowhere in there Does it say anything about the county? So what I'm giving you is a list of places where there are, it can be argued that this proposition conflicts with Proposition 215. And since it was passed almost 15 later, it is going to be determined to supersede Proposition 215. Another one of those places.
Let me interrupt you again, Craig. This time I'm having problems with transmission. Your voice is getting fuzzy. I'm wondering, is it possible that we could, and we're also heading toward the end of the show, can we postpone the rest of this discussion until a time when you can actually come in the studio and be heard more clearly?
Oh, I suppose. I didn't want to comment. You know, I was asking whether it was mentioned that there is no bus service out to Harvey West at night or not. And I certainly intend to walk out of a marijuana dispensary at night and walk home from there.
So you're suggesting that this ASA meeting in a week is not in a very good place, huh?
Well, there's no bus service at night. Even for people who are not mobility challenged, it's not a place that I couldn't go there. Someone has offered me a ride, so I will probably go next week, but I won't be going again. I don't want to have someone to have to give me a ride there every month. And, it's not a good place. This has been an issue for a long time. I sat next to Lisa Molyneux, when I was running for city council, taking a panel discussion for community TV, and I made a point that there was no bus, this was 2 years ago, no bus service to Harvey West on the weekends or at night. And that this was not accommodating medical marijuana patients, and this is a kind of local issue that needs to be addressed.
What was her response?
Well, it seems that everyone doesn't give a damn and that I've been completely ignored, or maybe they like it that way. I don't know.
You've been critical of Greenway and Lisa Molyneux's club in the past, and yet in your most recent writings on this issue at examiner.com in this new chapter of ASA, you seem to be adopting a gentler tone about it, although you do have this concern you just mentioned, that it's not accessible. The meetings of this new chapter are next to Lisa Molyneux's Greenway or out there, you know, in the area where there's no bus service at night and on weekends.
That's right. You know, and even if there was bus service, I wouldn't want to be sitting at that bus stop for an hour waiting for a bus, or however long it is. It's just coming out of a medical marijuana dispensary in that area at night, I most certainly would not feel safe there.
So perhaps you're suggesting that this is an okay situation for people who have cars and, you know, more upper-middle-class resources, but for those who are poor and those who are homeless, it's kind of a no-go.
I'm very disappointed because I was really hoping that this would be something that would be good for the community. I'm astounded that Santa Cruz has had no place for medical marijuana patients and their supporters to come and meet and address their issues and take them to city council and get something done about them. And now when it appears that someone is putting them out yourself out to try to form such a group, then they go have it at some place. And it's quite possible that, Lisa is trying to be generous with this offer, but one really wonders, there's no bus service on nights and weekends. Surely they know that. It's been there for 5 years. It's been that way for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. How late is Lisa Molyneux's club open? It's not, her dispensary isn't open at night, is it?
Well, I think the last bus, I could actually look it up. I think it's at 4:45. It could be at 5:45. I don't know how late they're open. I haven't been there in years.
Well, you've told me you're concerned that the so-called, low-income services, compassion bags, haven't been that low-income or compassionate or good, and that also you're concerned about the price and quality of the Greenway stuff, if I'm not mistaken?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm concerned. I quite frankly don't give a damn anymore. I don't expect to ever go there again. I was extremely disappointed in the price and the quality and the treatment I received. And I believe on the article that I wrote talking about, if you look down under for more information down at the bottom, I have a link to reviews for both of the clubs that are in Santa Cruz. One of them, I think it was in April the 20th, from memory, but anyway, that said that they had discontinued their compassion bag at the Greenway, one of the reviewers, and they were rather upset about that.
What about, has Ken Sampson appeared at all in these negotiations or these meetings? I know that he runs the other club, Lime Kiln, or whatever it's called.
He hasn't been to the two meetings that I attended. There were people from WAM and there were people from Greenway at the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Sampson, so far as I know, no one from Ken Sampson or no one from that dispensary has attended any of the meetings.
And what's happening with WAM? I know that there was some concern about its, going under more. There were some concerns it was losing its, its growing space. There was a couple of major articles about it in the weeklies. How's WAM doing? Do you know?
I don't know. I haven't concerned myself with them that much. I've just been more concerned with, I guess, broader issues. I'm very concerned with this initiative. I did get an email from WAM Movie. I think they were soliciting $50 to enter their movie in some, like Sundance or whatever, festival, some film festival. It wasn't Sundance.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to enter it in some festival, and I thought, Jesus Christ, they're having to beg for $50 to enter their movie at a festival. I mean, that's really bad, I think. I would think they would have at least $50 they could do to, if they wanted to enter the movie in the festival.
Hmm. So, are there any other articulate discussions of this tax and regulate marijuana initiative that you would recommend people check out if they want to get both sides of the issue and explore the pros and cons of the upcoming November initiative?
Probably Bruce Kane he's got a website called New Age System, and he's probably got, other than myself, the best analysis.
Give me that name again.
His name's Bruce Kane. His website is New Age Citizen. That's all one word.
New Age Citizen.
But none of them, what I've noticed, for instance, Jeffrey Miron, I think, the Harvard economics professor, wrote one that's been circulated a lot. And he goes on and on for paragraphs talking about some nebulous concept called legalization and goes on to say, if the taxes and the licenses don't cost too much, then prices of marijuana will go down. Well, now they're charging $15,000 for a dispensary license in Maine, and the cost of a pharmacy license in Maine is $200.
Is how much?
In Oakland, huh?
How much in Maine is the cost of a pharmacy license?
$200.
So it's $15,000 for marijuana and $200 for a pharmacy license?
Right. In California, the license for pharmacy is $400, and the license, it's different wherever you go. Richard Lee and those people in Oakland are all paying $30,000 a year for their licenses, and as a matter of fact, Jeff Whitfield, who is on the steering committee of this initiative, has announced plans to open a mega grow in Oakland. I don't know if you've heard about that. I think they're talking about producing 56 pounds a week or something like that.
This is important stuff, and the problem is it's getting fuzzed out. So let me thank you, Craig, for coming on, and hope we can actually drag you into the studio next week or the Sunday after and talk about it, and we can actually hear you better.
Okay, well, I'm sorry that my speakerphone's not that good. But
well, it could be the equipment in the studio. I blame Uncle Dennis because he's always a convenient scapegoat here.
Uh-huh.
And he's in the studio, too. So, anyway, thanks. We're talking with Craig Canada, and your website is examiner.com. Not your website, but your articles can be found at examiner.com, right?
Right. The best, if you want to find my articles, I've got a list of them on the sidebar of my blog, and that's www.palmspringsbum.org/blog.
www.palmspringsbum.org/blog.
Yeah, and there's a list of my articles there and more than you ever wanted to know about me.
Well, thanks, Craig, and I want to know more, but I ain't got any time, and maybe we can talk about it again.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, man.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
And that's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Thomas Levitt will be taking my show on Sunday. I may be calling in from Los Angeles. Tuesday's city council meeting will include a new law that will make it easier to make misdemeanors out of infractions at the discretion of the city attorney. So all you sleepers, watch out. You thought it was an infraction. Well, if you sleep three times without permission of I don't know who, because there's really not no provision for getting that kind of permission in Santa Cruz. You may be faced
with... I give you permission.
Oh, Dennis here is, of course, a generous fellow, but he has no...
Only you, Robert.
Well, let me see. So you're not really included out there, listeners. That's how it is at Free Radio. We keep a tight clique here, so, you know, butt out is all I can say. Anyway, thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Should be archived in the day at HuffSantaCruz.org. You can call me and leave messages. Even though I'm out of town, I'll be checking my voicemail for all the latest. 423-4833 is the number. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides.
On the turning away from the pale and downtrodden and the words they say which we won't understand, don't accept that what's happening is just a case of all the suffering. Oh, you'll find that you're joining in the turning away. It's a sin that somehow light is changing to shadow and casting a shroud over all we have known. Oh,
little Pink Floyd for you there while we escort Robert Norse out the door. Uncle Dennis here for my usual Thursday evening spot on From the Cream to the Dregs. We're going to get into music for the next 3 hours or so, walking through the archives of the 60s and the 70s here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We're also on the Wide Weird Web at freakradio.org. 8:30 we'll open up the Brew of the Week. Stay tuned for that. At 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use right here on Free Radio. Stay tuned. Here's some Moby Grape for you.